Okay, so now I want to talk about random variables. It's often useful to identify the elements of the largest interesting partition of omega as a set of states. If we have a finite set, then we can just use the elements of omega. Now, the largest partition has the most events in it, and those events are as small as we can detect. So if we know the probability of all the states, then we can compute the probability of all the events made by combining them just by adding them up. The other thing that we can do with omega when it's treated as a set of states is to define a random variable, which is a function of omega and omega to some set S. Typically, this set contains numbers, but it might contain vectors or functions of time. And in general, we have pretty much anything could be there. But the important thing here is that the random variable is actually a function. And we can do the things that we usually do with functions with our random variable. So we define a distribution or cumulative distribution function of a random variable that has numeric values to be the function f of c is equal to p of the event omega such that x of omega is less than or equal to c for some c and s. It's possible to generalize this to vectors or even functions of time, but we don't need to do that for this class. We also often define two other functions, the probability mass function, f of c is equal to the probability that x is equal to c for some omega, or for those omega, and we define the event in terms of this relationship x equal to c. And this makes sense for finite sets. Or if we have a continuous set like the real interval from 0 to 1 that I used as an example before, we define a probability density function, little f of c, which is the derivative of f at c. And this depends on whether f is a step function, in which case the probability at a point makes sense, or if it's differentiable, in which case the probability of actually hitting a particular c is always going to be zero at that point, but the slope of f is well defined. These two functions depend on fairly strict conditions. The probability mass function only exists for all of the interesting c if f is a step function. That is, it always jumps and then is flat, jumps again and is flat, jumps again and is flat until it hits 1, and then it stays flat forever. Or it could be differentiable, in which case the f prime always, capital F prime always exists. But these are pretty strict conditions. There are lots of times when we want an infinite set for our domain, and other times it's not necessarily going to be differentiable over that whole set. And so f will always exist because it's necessarily an increasing function. But little f may not. Big F exists, but little f may not. This is not usually a problem for us in Charcot, although it does cause us problems for example, game theorists who want to work with games like the War of Attrition, where each player chooses a particular time at which to quit. If you have a pure strategy, then this is going to be a step function at that pure strategy. On the other hand, people might want to vary continuously, and they might want to do something different from that, where they vary continuously over some intervals, but have jumps in the total probability at some point that allows them to put more than zero weight on a particular number. And this is necessary for game theory, but generally in Shaco, we don't actually need to do this. We either work with a relatively simple probability mass function, or we use the probability density function. The normal or bell curve is a typical example of a probability density function. So what do we do with random variables? Well, a random variable allows us to express numerical uncertainty in a way that we can work with in mathematical terms. For example, we may wish to predict a stock price in the future. If we just want to pick a particular time and figure out what the stock price is and think about holding the stock until that time, then the distribution of stock prices at that time is a random variable that we would be interested in. And these primitive events or states can be almost anything. In fact, in statistics, we usually completely ignore them. We start by defining a random variable's distribution, and then we ignore the random variable itself much of the time. Random variables are used so that we can understand concepts like independence and mutual exclusion for random numbers, which are a little bit complicated ideas. Another thing that we do with random variables is that we may compose random variables. So for example, if you if you have a stock and you want to put in an order, then the probability of the stock being a particular number tomorrow, the price of the stock being a particular number tomorrow, is going to be a random variable and it will have a distribution. Then, depending on that particular price, you may choose a different price. You might say, I'm going to bid a price lower than the current price tomorrow. And that corresponds to a strategy of thinking, well, if the price goes down temporarily and I can buy at that price, probably the price will go back up to the same level it started at, and then I will make a profit. So you have decided that you want to pick a particular price compared to the price tomorrow, but the price tomorrow is a random variable. It turns out that since you have a function, you've decided a rule for picking the price that you're going to bid as a function of the price that you observe, the price that you actually bid is also a random variable, and we can get it by composing this function. That is, for every value of omega in big omega, we can find out what x is, and then we can apply your rule to that and find out what your bid is. But now we have a rule that goes from the little omegas to through x to your bid. Another example is that in a survey question, we may ask a subject about some property of a product. Choose the word that best expresses your feeling from love, like, indifferent, dislike, or hate. Then the set S is not numeric, but a set of feelings, love, like, indifferent, dislike, and hate. We typically convert this from words to numbers between 1 and 5 using what is called a 5-level Likert scale. Love is equal to 5, like is equal to 4, indifferent equal to 3, dislike equal to 2, and hate equal to 1. Then the set T might be defined as integers or real numbers, and it might be defined precisely as 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So our function S is words, it gives us numbers, and if we know the probabilities of the numbers, or if, of the words that people use, the fraction of people who give each particular word, then we can come up with a number, and our Likert scale is also a random variable, but it's numerical. Decomposing the Likert scale into X and F has the advantage that it's easy to remember that quantitative measurement of feelings is difficult. Even if we tell people that they should circle the number 1 when they hate something and the number 4 when they only like it but don't quite love it. And that's typically the way we give the directions, the instructions to participants in such a questionnaire survey. However, when we're actually doing the work, we often think of these numbers as observations on the people's feelings. But there's problems with this. First of all, two different people may assign different intensities of feeling to the words hate and love. And these, therefore, what we really want to do is have people have equal numbers for equal feelings. But if they use different words for their feelings at the same level of intensity, then we are not going to get the right numbers. Second, it's even possible that a particular person has a not very distinct feeling between like and indifferent, or like and dislike, but hate and love are really extreme. And so if we're going to measure them quantitatively, we really should choose something like 1, 4, 5, 6, and 9. And that would give us a more accurate assessment of that particular person. So measuring people's feelings and even trying to get them to correspond to the particular words is relatively difficult. People are hard to compare, and even differences across a single person may be hard to compare based on these words. Or even the scales of 1 to 10. They may have distributions that are different for different people, and we might not really want to do that. We may have people who are always willing to say that they love or hate something, or other people who always say that they like or dislike but never use love or hate. So quantitative measurement of feelings is different, and if we decompose the Likert scale into the function X, which is the word that a person uses, and the function F, which transforms those words into numbers, may be easier for us to remember this problem that measurement of people's feelings, even about something as reasonable as a product, where you don't expect people to get terribly upset and have extreme feelings, but express them more objectively. Measurement of people's feelings quantitatively is difficult, and this separation may be useful. There are other cases. For example, you might have a function that's based on the price in the market, but the price in the amount of money that you make from that price also depends on the quantity. And if you are not buying stocks where you choose the order, but you are a firm, and you decide to take a certain amount of your product to the market, and you're going to sell it at that price, but this also depends on demand. And so the price is a variable, and the amount you want to sell may also be a variable, and the two of those put together are going to determine your profit. And so the random variable that's the price, if you respond to that by selling more at high prices and less at low prices, the profit is not going to be directly a function of the underlying variable, but rather it's going to be a composed function between your rule for choosing quantity on the base of the price and the random variable price. But your profit then becomes a random variable once you actually do compose those two functions. So composing random variables or composing functions to get new random variables is a very useful operation in many modeling contexts. We also need a concept of independence of random variables. So I mentioned that the quantity that you want to sell is not going to be independent of the price in the market. In fact, you may have a rule for that. In other cases, for example, if you are an economist studying price and quantity in the market, although you don't know what supply and demand is, you do know that supply and demand both affect the relationships, and depending on what supply and demand are, changes in prices and quantities will affect each other in certain ways. So we would like to know whether the two random variables are necessarily dependent on each other or independent of each other. And so we need to define independence of random variables. So for example, it might be that you have the price of Mercedes-Benz in Scuba and the price of rice in Osaka. And these might be independent of each other. You might think that these really don't have too much to do with each other. How do we define that when we have these complicated objects that are random variables, that are whole functions? In order to relate to the probabilities of two random variables, we need to have the same state space omega. They have to be defined on the same omega. Now, when we compose a function with a random variable, we necessarily get the same omega, but since one is functionally dependent on the other, pretty clearly they're not independent. However, we could also have more complicated dependencies, and we'd like to be able to define independent in that case. So we define a random vector x1 and x2 such that omega is a function from the two outcome sets, the target sets. And we define x of omega as equal to x1 of omega combined with x2 of omega as a vector. So they have the same omega. Then we can define a joint cumulative distribution of the two random variables, x1 and x2, to be the function of two arguments, c1 and c2, such that both x1 of omega is less than or equal to c1, and x2 of omega is less than or equal to c2. Then we can say that two random variables, x1 and x2, with the same state space omega, are independent when f of c1, c2 is equal to f of c1 times f of c2 for all c1 and c2 in s1 and s2. Now, in modeling, you don't want to just couple two random variables by defining them on the same state space. This is generally not going to give you any independence. If you have two random variables that are already defined, then they probably won't be independent. This is rarely a problem in theory, because we usually make assumptions that these are independent or dependent in a certain way, but it frequently catches researchers creating simulations. Some of the things that you believe really can happen become impossible in the simulation. Conditional distributions are defined in the same way using conditional probabilities. Again, you need to be careful about state spaces. And again, conditional distributions are defined over the whole state space, just as the conditional distributions are, or the conditional probabilities would be. So here's a simple example of random variables and the various things that we do with them. Consider a set of primitive events or states and a probability function for them. So, for example, we have a colored die with red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and violet sides, and the uniform probability, the probability of red is the probability of orange, the probability of yellow is the probability of green, is the probability of blue, is the probability of violet is 1/6. Since there are six possibilities and they each have probability 1/6, we can multiply by 6 and we get 1. So the sure event that some color of those comes up does have the right probability of 1. Now, a random variable is a function from this set omega to z with, here we're going to give it real number outcomes. In particular, x of red is equal to 0, x of orange is equal to 1, x of yellow is equal to 2, x of green is equal to 0, x of blue is equal to 1, and x of violet is equal to 0. These are not probabilities, as you can tell, because x of yellow is equal to 2, which is outside the range that's allowed. We also don't have any problem giving the same value to more than one of our state space. Red, green, and violet all have the same value, 0. And there are lots of numbers, such as 3 and 1.5, that don't come up as values for our random variable at all. So our random variable is actually, as such, it's disconnected from the probabilities because it's only defined in terms of the primitive events or states in omega. It's only when we associate it with the probability p on omega that we actually can do probabilities with x. So now we go to the next slide. We can define other random variables on the same primitive events. So for example, y has all values 0 except in the case of blue, which is 1. This kind of random variable is called a dummy variable. Dummy variables are frequently used in statistics to analyze qualitative properties of sample observations. A dummy random variable is one that only takes the values 0 and 1. Here's a case where we compose a random variable with a function. Our random variable x, we can take the square of that to get a new random variable z. And z takes the values red of 0 for red, 1 for orange, 4 for yellow, 0 for green, 1 for blue, and 0 for violet. It turns out that except for yellow, they're the same as x, but that's because it happens that for 0 and 1, the square of the number is equal to the number itself. Okay.